school, he was expert in the worked on various problems in one of the North Central commissions. He's spoken here himself on several occasions. He's been a warm and good friend in what he shared with the Miller family. And that includes the opportunity for all of us to meet with people who come to him, come to the law school, because of the leadership that he's exerted in the field of Soviet American cultural relations. So it seems to us very appropriate that he be the chair of this meeting and he'll take over at your point.
Well, thank you, Ken. It seems a nice bit of timing, although it's completely fortuitous, that on the heels of the CSCE conference. Can you hear me? On the heels of the CSCE conference that we have with us today, two representatives of the Georgian Republic. Note what I said. I did not say the Soviet Socialist Republic of Georgia, but the Georgian Republic. Because as the Cold War comes to an end through this agreement, new issues emerge. We're focused, of course, on the Middle East, but there are other difficult problems and also opportunities involving national identity and national self-determination in the wake of this European settlement. One of the pressing claims are those of the nations that were absorbed into the Soviet Union, in Georgia's case, absorbed in 1921 by invasion followed by annexation, a formula that may sound familiar in other contexts. My oldest and best friend from the Soviet Union is Tedo Japaridze. He was, until last year, at the USA Institute, the Arbatov Institute in Moscow, but is now the head of Information and Analysis Directorate for the Georgian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. His colleague, Shota Danadze, is the head of the Fund of Education for the Georgian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Tedo's English is impeccable. Shota, I think Ted will probably help translate his remarks. But without further ado, Tedo and Shota.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thompson, Paul, ladies and gentlemen, because it's really great pleasure and honor for me to be here. It's my second visit to the Miller Center. It was 2 years ago, a hot summer day, when Mr. Thompson and Mr. Young listened to my analysis about what was going on in the Soviet Union. And my analysis at that time was very positive. I mean, positive about the Soviet Union and about Gorbachev and his policy and perestroika and glasnost. And when we were coming, you know, to this center, we discussed with Paul some new trends, you know, which appeared in Soviet Union and Gorbachev's policy, and we came to conclusion how things changed, you know, in the Soviet Union. And what, in my opinion, was, you know, progressive 2 years ago, it seems now just a little bit, you know. I cannot say that it's negative, but things are more dramatic and sometimes even negative for us. So before we carry on, you know, just very brief, just information, because what happened in Georgia and what's happening in the Soviet Union, I'll tell just a few words about myself. I'm Tedo Japaridze, and I spent just about 24 years in Moscow. I'm a Georgian. I was born in Georgia, and my roots are in Georgia, and I spent 25 years in Moscow at the USA Canadian Studies institute, which is known in the USA as Arbatov's Institute. And there my field of interest was American presidents. That's why it's a great pleasure for me to be here, because my professional interest is American presidency, the process of decision making, how decisions are made in White House, and what's are, you know, the peculiarities and so on. And in December in 1989, I moved back to Georgia because I was offered a position at in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Georgia. And my first position was the vice chairman of UNESCO organization in Georgia. And I know that UNESCO is not popular in the United States, but still, we consider that UNESCO is UNESCO structures and UNESCO's abilities are might be very, very useful for Georgians, because United Nations scientific, cultural, and educational, you know, abilities are just might be helpful for Georgians, because before. It's my thinking that before any state or any people get independence or sovereignty, it should build this sovereignty on a base of education, science, and culture. And just a couple of months ago, I was promoted, if I can call it a promotion, and I now head of, we called it, Directorate of Political Science, Political Analysis, Political Information Analysis, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Georgia. And a colleague of mine, Mr. Donadze, he's a head of a very peculiar, you know, structure within the UNESCO organization. We called it Educational Fund for UNESCO. That means that he's a big man, he raises money for these educational and scientific programs, and we call it Georgian Fat Cat. You know.
Yes.
So, just a few words, what happened in Georgia couple of weeks ago, to be exact, you know, on the 28th October 1999, when these elections, the first round of elections, the first free elections since 1921, when the Georgians, you know, when Georgia was, we call it, occupied and then annexed by the Soviet Russia. And since that time, in 1990, October 28, we have had this multi-party free elections in Georgia. First, this sort of elections in the Soviet Union, because there is no analog to these elections in the Soviet Union. But before I'll tell you what happened, you know, in Georgia concerning these elections, maybe, I'm not sure whether you know, maybe somebody knows where Georgia is, and because I remember one of my visits to New York, I get taxi and the driver asked me, well, what country you are from? Which city? I say Moscow. Oh, okay, it's in Norway. Okay. So, you know, Georgia is one of the southern republics of the, so it was or is, I don't know, republics of the Soviet Union. Just for your information, it was the Christianity, you know, came to Georgia in the first century. And officially, the official religion, the Christianity, became in 4th century. So the Georgia is very ancient. country, and we really are very proud of our country, and sometimes we are too proud and lose objectivity estimating these processes. You know, I have some information maybe. As far as when I was at the Institute of the USA Canadian Studies, and my field of interest was pure just scientific research, I could, you know, just discuss some problems more freely, and, you know, but now at the diplomatic work, I should just say it because. So, the population of the territory of Georgia is just about 5.5 million people. And Tbilisi, which used to be called Tiflis, you know, before revolution, is about 1.5 million now. And 66% of population in Georgia are Georgians, 12% Armenians, 10% Russians, just about 3% Ossetians, you know, ethnic minority, and 2.4% Kurds. We have in Georgia three autonomous republics. You know, the first is Abkhazia. And if you heard, we have some problems and with this autonomous region. And the second autonomous region is Ossetian Republic, and the third one is Ajaria. It's on the Black Sea coast, and its population. They are Georgian, but their religion is Muslim. But the Abkhazians are the different ethnic minority, like Ossetians. So, what happened, you know, on the date of 28th of October 1999, as I understand that these political forces that had been kept in check, you know, during this time, you know, I mean the 74 decades, were suddenly released, and people, you know, public faced, you know, with a wide variety of parties to choose. You know, Georgians are, there is a saying that if two Georgians are three parties, you know, that's why, you know, at the beginning there were just about 150 parties, you know, in Georgia, maybe 140 for 10 people. But at the end of this election campaign, there were just about 35 parties. Among them, the Communist Party. There is a Rustaveli Society as a political party, and the other ones, they take part in this election as an independent parties. The other parties were integrated, you know, in different blocks, like this round table Free Georgia, the block of parties who got this election. They are now in power. So. The problem, you know, as far as this was the first election, though, the problem of for Georgian public was to understand the mechanism of this election. So the voters elected, you know, 125 delegates by direct vote, we call it, and 125 according to the proportional representation of 11 political parties and blocks. the total number of eligible voters was just about 3.5, of which 2.5 people actually voted. And by proportional representation, the round table Free Georgia political bloc got, 81 seats in Georgian parliament. And the Communist Party got just 44 seats, just half. None of other parties, because I mentioned that just about 35 parties, took were participating in these elections. None of other parties, have any seat in this in new parliament. Roundtable Free Georgia Bloc is headed by Zviad Gamsakhurdia. At this roundtable bloc, consists of different parties, and among them the Helsinki Union of Georgia, and the chairman of this Helsinki Union is Zviad Gamsakhurdia himself. Then there is a party of they call it Saint Ilya, the Right Ear Society, the Merab Kostava Society, the Union of Georgian Traditionalists, the Popular Front of Georgia Radical Union, the National Liberal Union of Georgia, and National Christian Party of Georgia. This is the bloc, of Roundtable Free Georgia. And these elections were attended by official observers, and I'd like here, to take chance and thank one more time Mr. Paul Steven, who helped, us very much, and he sent, to Georgia the brilliant team of USA observers, and who worked very hard. And they watched how elections, went, and they had some critical, they criticized us, but generally their attitude was really constructive and positive. And these observers came from the United States, France, Spain, Belgium, Germany, Sweden, Austria, Finland, and other countries. So maybe it might be interesting, what are, the main points of this, we call it election platform or political platform of this roundtable, Free Georgia. And to be exact, I have this clipping from the newspaper, So when they came to power, they declared, if we compare two models, so we call it Baltic model to get independence and the Georgian, and Baltic republics went straight ahead and they declared independence, and it was cause of some problem. They caused problem to themselves and to foreign states and to Gorbachev himself, but the Georgians decided that after election and when this roundtable for Georgia bloc came to power, for 5 years Georgia will have this transitional period, maybe 5, maybe 6, maybe 10, but 5 years is the minimal amount of time. And during this 5 year period, this transitional period, the legal, political, and economic foundations of the new state will be formulated. It's the idea. I don't know how it might be implemented in practice, because I'm sure that Georgians and these new people in power will have some problems, and they are now, even now, are having these problems. So, in this transitional period, the Supreme Council, and we call it Supreme Council and not the Supreme Soviet, Supreme Council of Georgia should immediately approve measures concerning They say a declaration that land, airspace, and natural resources are national property. Second, the establishment of land, sea, and air frontiers. The establishment of National Customs Service. The certain creation of national military forces. A declaration that Soviet troops on Georgian soil constitute the occupation force of all foreign power. So I understand that some of these, you know, points are, may sound for you, for Americans, just a little bit maybe provocative or just, but still, it's a reality of life, you know. And the creation of National Security Service. And the newly elected Supreme Council should immediately begin talks, and they began already, and they declared that talks with the Supreme Soviet of Russia on the gross violation by Soviet Russia of the Russo-Georgian Treaty of May 1920, which was violated in 1920-21, and the Russian Federation, Soviet Russia, you know, conquered Georgia. There can be no talk of Georgia's participation in the Union Treaty. And you know that Gorbachev and the central power in Moscow are trying, you know, to create this new Union Treaty. And besides Georgians, they have some problems with Russians, Armenians, Moldova, and maybe with all the republics, because there are some doubts about whether it's good for republics to sign this new Union Treaty or not. Then what else? The Georgian government should demand compensation from the USSR for economic exploitation and plundering of Georgia's natural resources. Reinstitution should proceed according to international law. So the main idea of these changes, which might and I hope will take place in Georgia, should be based, and this is the idea of every party, you know, that are in the Supreme Council, including the Communist Party, that everything should be based on international law. Then, strategic military objectives are to be a subject of negotiations, because you know that there are a lot of strategic objective sites in Georgia, and these objectives are to be a subject of negotiations with the USSR. And switching to a market economy will create good conditions for Georgia's integration into the international economy. It's the point, and they are very positive and very hopeful. I mean, these roundtable people about that, but it's my personal opinion that it might be not so easy, because if I say that we have economy in Georgia, it will be, I think, great or too much, because in my opinion we have no economy in Georgia, because everything completely ruined and nothing works. So to integrate Georgia in international economic structures will take just maybe not 5 years, maybe not even 10 years, or maybe more. And Paul, you know the situation. It maybe we'll need just about 25 years to understand what this international economy means and how these international economic structures work. So the first steps of the newly elected Supreme Council of the Republic of Georgia its official title of Georgia, Republic of Georgia. They, as Mr. Steven mentioned, they decided not to use the word Soviet anymore. So the decision was made that the from that day, from the Supreme Council started in day November 5, and November 6, the new name of Georgia was the Republic of Georgia. The second measure, which was enacted by the Supreme Council, was the decision that the Georgians in future won't send, you know, their young people to Soviet army, and they Georgians will go this army service, yes, on the territory of Georgia. What else? There is no new emblems of state emblems of Georgia. There is no red star and something like that on the Georgian flag. The religious Georgians as Christian people, you know, on the flag there is a Saint George killing this dragon or something, and this official emblem of Republic of Georgia. And top priority of newly elected Supreme Council of Republic of Georgia, as they call it in foreign press, will be Russia. And discussions which took place in the very first days in the Supreme Council of Georgia, majority of members of the Supreme Council decide and agreed that the top priority in that Georgians should not just cut the ties with the Russia, because they consider the Russia spiritually, intellectually, you know, religiously, economically, and politically, and from the military point of view, the most союзник, George, what's called союзник?
Union oriented?
Not союзник.
United.
Союз. They should have very close relations with Russia in these fields. So, but now we have a delegation which now have some sort of negotiations with the Russian Republic. I mean Boris Yeltsin, and that makes, you know, just a little bit furious and nervous Mr. Gorbachev, because he understands that something is going on just directly without going to Moscow, and just some negotiations are also, you know, taking place with Ukraine, Moldova, our nearest neighbors, Armenia. Armenia and Azerbaijan. And one of the first official documents, you know, declared during the during the first days of the Supreme Soviet was appeal of the Supreme Council of Republic of Georgia to the Paris Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, which, you know, just finished its work yesterday in the afternoon. And we sent this document directly to this conference headquarters, and we hope that the ideas of Georgian independence and independence and the sovereignty will, you know, find supporters among these among Western, among the governments of Western countries, and so that's all, you know, because my information is, we just began our, we call it, you know, just free life. We understand that we have great many problems to be solved, but frankly speaking, you know, Georgians, not only Georgians, but I mean these republics, and I understand that my presentation might, you know, be contradicting your thinking, because I know that Mr. Gorbachev is and his policy, and I understand your position is very popular here, because Gorbachev has done a lot of positive things, and even these things that happened in Georgia was, because if were not the Gorbachev, these things might haven't take place in Georgia. But still, you know, this aspiration for freedom and independence are very high in Georgia, and I think that there is no other way to go back, you know. Though we understand that the future is very difficult and complicated, and but still we go on and carry our pursuit to, as you call it, to happiness, to freedom, and independence.
Should we have some back and forth
questions? Yes, please.
And then all both of you can respond.
Sure, yeah,
sure. Who would like to ask Bill Wankel?
I take it there is no support for a U.S. type federal system in which Georgia would be a nation in a sense, but would have the part of the overall Soviet governing of foreign relations, defense, and things like that. The history doesn't seem to allow for that, and therefore that what you in Georgia expect, by the way, I don't think that you ought to worry about hurting anybody's feelings here about Mr. Gorbachev. He does have a lot of admirers, but not as many, perhaps, as you might think from reading the papers. Well, I take it the end result, which, as you point out, is very difficult, but and takes time, but is the objective is a nation of Georgia, which would be completely self-governing in every respect. Its defense forces and international relations and domestic government. Is that?
So, you're quite right, you know, because when we discuss, you know, this problem of Georgian independence and the Republic problem with my American colleagues, there is just one peculiar, you know, points, you know, because if we compare, you know, USA system and with the system which we have in the Soviet Union, I mean the republics and states, you know, the difference, I think, is that here in the United States you have, you know, for example, 13 states, you know, at the beginning. Then you went through this melting pot, and now you have the one American nation, we can call it that way, though you have this ethnical and, you know, some culture and so on, different cultures. But in Georgia, in the Soviet Union, if we compare it to the system you have here, and why we have some so big problems, you know, with the republics, because the Soviet Union consists or consisted, maybe, let's okay, it consists still, you know, with there are different countries, you know, with different culture, history. And I mentioned Georgia, which was Christianed in officially in the 4th century. Georgia has its own very ancient history, you know, culture. And if we compare, you know, for example, Georgia to these Central Asian republics, which are also very ancient but have different religion, different cultural, historical, you know, heritage. And that's the main reason why we could not use the American model of melting pot, you know, in the Soviet Union, and it was impossible because the national identity and is very, very high in the Soviet Union and among these republics, you know, and any attempt to somehow to make this melting pot work, you know, was just it didn't work. But I will repeat one more time. We understand that there is one side of the problem when you declare this independence and the aspiration to freedom, and you know, and so on and so on. And we understand that the practical implementation of these ideas is the other side of problem, and this other side is very difficult and problematic maybe sometimes. But when we say about, you know, and we discussed just this morning this problem with Paul, and there are two dimensions, because if we take, for example, American position, because you should support, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, and you are right in your when you do this, because there is a problem of geopolitical, you know, the problem of policy, and as I know, the one of the component, main component of American foreign policy is the support of people who are trying to get independence and sovereignty and freedom. So there is contradiction, and from that point of view, I understand that because there are some criticism in Georgia and in other republics that the countries like United States and the Western Europe, they do not support actively, you know, this our aspiration to freedom. And I and my colleagues at the ministry, we try to explain that, okay, it's not so easy for them. And when we speak about support, you know, I don't mean this something physical support, but we would like that people here in the United States or in other countries just understand what we want, just our aims.
But let's try to get as many questions as we can in, so maybe if you can make your questions shorter than I usually do.
General, maybe my answers will
be. No, your answers are fine. And then Bill.
I understand the emotions of history and all that.
Yeah.
In the real world, though, even the European community and their individual nations who go back in history quite as far as Georgia are seeing, in order to have vitality and durability, that the European nations have to come together. I suspect in the long run of history you all will come to that conclusion, but right now...
You know, it's a very good question, because as I understand it, when we speak... So you mean that now we have the process of integration in Europe, and it contradicts, you know, our aspiration to get away and disperse in the Soviet Union. But I think we have here, you know, concerning this problem, different dimensions, because before Europeans were involved in this process of integration. They get this independence, freedom as a sovereign countries, and then after that, it was the first phase, and the second phase was just the integration process. But here in Georgia and in the Soviet Union, since 1917, you know, there is no. It's impossible to think about this, you know, freedom or independence. So I understand that my answer might sound, you know, just a little bit contradictory, but maybe we'll try to somehow disintegrate, I mean, the Soviet, and try to do this process evolutionary, no revolutions, because for us it's enough to have revolutions in the Soviet Union. And then afterwards, I am sure, because when Georgia, you know, declares its independence, it doesn't mean that Georgians take, for example, their land, you know, and go somewhere. No, they stay in the same place, and just after they get independence and they freedom, all the republics will come together, you know, because there is no other way. It's a logic of history and politics and so on and so on.
Bill Harper,
what's happening in the Georgian countryside? Is there a program for restructuring agriculture?
So one of the I just forget to mention it, that when I mentioned the first acts, you know, Supreme Council of Georgia is the private property for these kolkhoz and peasants. You know, the land will belong to individuals, but it's. There is a differentiated approach to this problem. Some kolkhoz and sovkhoz are just powerful, and there are just few ones, but still they are just economically very just. They can keep this system of kolkhoz, but majority of kolkhoz and sovkhoz are just something disaster. So. They try, you know, the Supreme Council of Georgia and these experts in the field of economy, they try to restructure, you know, Georgian countryside and maybe these individual farms or cooperatives or something, you know, different models of which are already used in different countries, you know, outside of Georgia. So there are some changes, but one more time, I like to repeat that we understand, you know, clearly that it's not easy process.
This is Martin and Henry Kielbar.
I wish you would comment this morning on a TV news program. I heard Professor Stephen Cohen of Princeton University, who is one of our Russian experts, say the following. We're always worrying about whether Gorbachev is going to fall and whether we should support him and not support him. And he said in the media in America, we blow up the crises. What we keep saying is another crisis for Gorbachev isn't really that much of a crisis in the Soviet Union. And that in the parliament, for instance, one day they boo him, and then the next day they vote him more powers.
I know.
And Professor Cohen says we must.
I know,
yeah.
I understand.
Yeah, but they can't hear. The question is, does the American media exaggerate Mr. Gorbachev's crises?
No, that's not all. He said, what we must do is consider the alternatives. Actually, Gorbachev is getting more and more powers voted for to him, although he is booed on one day. But we should consider the alternative, and do not think that the alternative to Gorbachev, if he does lose power, would be someone more freedom and independence minded. It could possibly be someone more conservative, backed by the Russian army.
You know,
a totally different government, swinging totally in the opposite direction.
No, my very brief and short answer might be the following, that, you know, sure, there is some sort of crisis, you know, in the Soviet Union. I mean, power crisis, because Gorbachev But the problem, when you speak about alternative to Gorbachev, mm-hmm. the problem, as I understand, in the Soviet Union is that there is no alternative to Gorbachev, and you know why. That doesn't mean that nobody, because nobody wants to substitute Gorbachev. The situation so Gorbachev is the only, you know, person now in the Soviet Union who can, maybe even he doesn't want to be in power, but he has no other way, because nobody wants to take his place.
Some time ago, we had a man here who was Polish and in the Polish government, and he was somewhat critical of the trend of the breakup of the Soviet republics on this basis. He said that it had taken some years to develop a political infrastructure in Poland, and they maybe have a fighting chance to have it work. Similarly, on the economic side, Poland was more of a unity with an economic base built up in Poland, whereas in most of the Soviet republics, that wasn't there. And he thought they were moving much too fast, and they should take it more easily and develop their political structure and their economic structure before they broke off, in which case you might have chaos.
I completely agree with your with this Polish, I don't know, scientist or politician, because politician, and I agree with these, you know, way of thinking, and that's why, you know, if we, I mentioned it in my this presentation, if we compare, you know, two models of independence in the Soviet Union, the Baltic model and the Georgian. So we do not repeat the Baltic way of, because they were too straight, I mentioned, you know, I mean, Baltic republics, and their straightness caused, you know, some problems, you know, even to themselves, to their you know, partners in the West, and even to Gorbachev. But if we compare the Georgian model, you know, I mentioned this transitional period, maybe 5 or 10 years, and during this period we will try to restructure evolutionary, you know. My point, I want to underline this word evolutionary, and according to international laws, and laws which will be created in the Supreme Soviet. Impossible to bind, you know, peoples of the Soviet Union and republics with this communism belief, because nobody nowadays believes, you know. And I hope, because I'm just 44 years old, and I have my grandmother and my grandfather who was killed, you know, in 1937. Even this generation, I doubt that they believed in all this, but there were some I don't. You know better that there was scare. They were frightened, you know, and that made them to believe, or maybe formally, but informally, they in their heart they were just resisted this. What might bind the republics? Maybe normal economy. Maybe free market oriented economy. Maybe if we take the Caucasian region, you know, the spiritual cultural ties we have with Armenians and the I can say with Azerbaijan Republic too, because this region is peculiar one. The spiritual ties I mentioned already with Russian people and Russian, you know, state or federation, you know. And if we take Armenians, one of the binding factors, you know, which I hope will keep us together, it might be religion, Christianity. And Zviad Gamsakhurdia, the newly elected Georgian leader, you know, he concluded his, you know, statement, the first statement in this Georgian Supreme Council, that Georgia is coming back to Christ. So the country, which was baptized, you know, Christian in the 4th century, and the people in Georgia are deeply religious people. Besides that, these 17 years were just, they had big problems concerning this religion, but one of the binding factors besides economy, cultural ties, and it might be religion, and we hope that religion can unite, you know, people and...
Is it true that the... follow-up question? In terms of our governments here, we put great stress on not having religion as a binding force. Indeed, it's not supposed to work into the philosophy of government at all. When you identify Christianity with a possible happening in Georgia over time, it raises in my mind the question that about the Muslims.
Yeah.
Is it not true that the population of Russia includes about 20% Muslim orientation?
55 million, yes. Just.
How many?
55.
Really?
Million.
So when I mentioned religious, you know, I didn't consider that we, Georgian government on Georgian this, you know, people who came to power, they're trying to put religion, you know, into politics or policy. Their intention is to revive religious, you know, religion in the life of ordinary people. You know.
Not their in, own
yeah, yes. As for, you know, Muslims and, you know, you, just about Georgia, in this, you know, respect, is just a peculiar state because just about 600,000 Azeri, you know, live in Georgian territory. Just about 500,000 Armenians live on Georgian territory. 26 centuries ago, Jewish people came to Georgia and they lived there. The part of them just emigrated, but they still keep their, you know, I call it adoration to Georgia. So what characterized Georgian state and Georgian culture during these centuries, it's religious tolerance, you know. So we in Georgia, and I'm very proud personally with this fact, that we never have something like pogrom. Never, you know. It doesn't mean that maybe some, you know, there were some, you know, religious or national clashes or but nothing, something like, there was no, I mentioned pogrom-like and Jewish people, you know. We call it even Georgian Jews. They called themselves, you know, Jewish people, Georgian Jews. Yes, they speak Georgian language. And when they emigrate, when they emigrated to Israel, and they kept the Georgian language. There are Georgian schools in Israel, you know, where kids go to Georgian schools. They attend the Georgian dancing companies and so on. So this religious tolerance might be something like this binding, you know, factor, you know, which helped Georgia to went through this difficult period of time.
Next question, Howard Cromwell.
When I studied,
excuse me, the lady had a question, then Howard.
Well, I think I will ask it because it's a follow-up to this. With respect to existing in the Republic of Georgia of these autonomous regions,
yeah,
and ethnic minorities, anticipate any kind of ethnic strife comparable to that which has occurred in Moldavia on part of these different groups against what they would see as a Georgian Republic?
Yeah, it's a very good question because, and you know the Soviet history and these ethnic autonomous republics are something like time bomb, you know, which were implanted, you know, by creators of Soviet Empire, because they can use this autonomous republic anytime they like to manipulate, you know. So maybe you know that we have some problems, not some problems, but great problems with this Abkhazian autonomous republic. And in 1989, in July 17, there were just violent clashes between, you know, Abkhazians and Georgian population of Abkhazian Autonomous Republic. But the problem here, you know, let's take Abkhazia. It's, you know, on the Black Sea coast, on the border with Russia. Russian Federation. There are about, you know, 70% of Abkhazian people, you know, living in Autonomous Republic. 17%, you know. Just about 52% of Georgian population living in Abkhazia. 10% of other national minorities, the Armenians, Greeks, Estonians, you know. So these 70% of Abkhazians, they have Autonomous Republic of Abkhazia. They have their own university, television, newspapers, you know, and so on and so on. So they held all these, you know, positions in government, you know, 70%, you know. If we take, for example, let's take the Central Committee of Communist Party of Abkhazia, you know, just let's take, they have 12, you know, major positions in this body. So 8 out of 12, these positions are held by Abkhazians, 4 by Georgians. So Abkhazian problem is not it's not the national problem, nationality problem, it's a class problem. The class struggle, you know, because Georgians and Abkhazians, historically, it's a Georgian territory, the second day after the first, you know, session of Georgian Parliament, the second day, the Abkhazians began, you know, some, you know, they were trying, you know, and they declared it there that they are going to withdraw from Georgian, from Georgian Republic. And from time to time, you know, this problem is manipulated, and they even do not hide their intentions. I mean, the center in Moscow, because they act just openly and freely, and everybody, you know, in Georgia and in different, even in Moldavia, the people, you know, ordinary people see the hands who manipulate with this, you know, like puppets, you know. So it's a really, really big problem, really big problem. But if we, you know, manage, you know, but there is one solution, maybe, it's in my opinion, and the solution is the following. If we, if Georgia, the new Georgian government and the Supreme Council can manage, will be able to manage this economic, you know, problems, and it might be, this economic foundation, you know, might be good basis to solve this, you know, some contradictions we have with this.
Power grumbling.
This will have to be our last question.
All right.
My concern in studying the map of Russia is to see how your natural resources are so concentrated in certain republics compared with others. And if you don't provide some sort of central distribution to a central government, one republic can hold the other hostage to the natural resources that they too have to have. I wonder if that is...
Yes, I agree, you know, with your view and your explanation of problem is quite right, but when we say that, let's take Georgia, Georgia gets independence, it doesn't mean that it, you know, Georgia cuts its economic ties with Russia or any other republic. What we want to be equal partners, you know, in these negotiations or something, because you know, the model of distribution or economic mechanism in the Soviet Union, that everything is decided in Moscow. And I can tell you just funny, it's not funny, but it sounds funny, you know, because if you want, you know, to export something, for example, from Georgia, you should get license in Moscow, for example. Let's take raw materials or wine, Georgian wine, which is produced in Georgia, but to get it exported to let's take United States, you should get license in Moscow. And if you want, you know, to put, for example, famous Georgian dancing company to make their tour in any foreign country, the license is given in Moscow. So, it's my personal, and I hope you'll agree with me. It's, excuse me this word, but it's stupid, you know.
I think our guests have to go on. We could so well continue this discussion for the next 3 or 4 hours. It's been most instructive, and we thank you very much.
Thank you.
Come back.